Hi, I'm Andrea Loyan, Vermont Edition producer, and I just wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening, and enjoy!
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. The world has watched in horror as thousands of people have died in the last 2 months in Israel and Gaza. The heated debate over what should be done to stop the violence has spread to homes, streets, and college campuses in the United States. Reports of anti-Semitic and anti-Arab hate crimes in the U.S. have also increased since the start of the crisis. Now, on Saturday, three college students of Palestinian descent were shot in Burlington. They were on an early evening walk, speaking in a mix of both English and Arabic. Two of them were wearing keffiyehs, traditional Palestinian scarves. As they would tell police later, a man stepped off a porch and shot each of them. 48-year-old Jason Eaton of Burlington has been arrested in connection to this shooting. Eaton was arraigned this morning in Chittenden County Superior Court, where he pleaded not guilty to three charges of attempted second-degree murder. Today on the show, we are going to share community responses to this tragic shooting. We're going to hear from local advocacy groups and officials. But we also want to hear from you. How did you feel when you heard about the shooting? You can email us at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org or call in at 800-639-2211. Now, this almost goes without saying, but I'll still say it. This is a highly charged moment, and the war is unquestionably horrific. Please, if you do call in, we ask for your respect for all people who are personally affected by the violence. One of the victims of the shooting's mothers, Elizabeth Price, spoke with NPR earlier this morning. She noted that her family is Vermont residents, but they live in Ramallah in the West Bank. Her son is a math and archaeology major at Brown University, Hisham. Now, she says she's planning to travel with her husband to the U.S. today to care for her son and the other two shooting victims. They were all very close friends. She called the boys the brightest of the brightest. Let's take a listen to that interview.
Hisham is stable, but he was hit by a bullet that seems to has broken his clavicle. It ricocheted off of his shoulder blade and has embedded itself in the T2 of his spinal cord, the thoracic 2. And it is in a place that it can't be moved. They're not going to do an operation on it currently because of the delicacy of the risks inherent in moving it. So the doctors currently say that he'll have it for the rest of his life. The pressure on its location has meant that he has no functional mobility in his legs. He can feel his legs, but he can't move his legs. It's unlikely that he'll be able to move his legs again. Hisham is an incredibly strong young man, saying that, you know, when his father said, be strong, he said, of course, I'm an Awartani, I'm strong, you know. So he obviously is saddened by the fact that his friends were also hurt, but he's been really buoyed up by their presence and the presence of my mother and my brother, who have spent selflessly, you know, 48 hours, you know, very mostly being by their bedside and dedicating themselves to their care and working with the hospital and protecting them from all the people who want to come in and ask them things. Today, Hisham, I spoke with him, and it's beginning to sink in the enormity of the challenges in front of him. He's tired. He's having a hard time sleeping because of the pain. And I know he's confronting a life of disability. So I think the adrenaline has left his body, and he is now confronting the almost potentially irreversible change to his life and what it means for his future. Yeah, no, the last month or last 6 weeks have been a time of great suffering in Palestine, and we have suffered. We have grieved at the enormity of the loss of the Palestinian people. We all have friends and family who have lost someone. My husband didn't want Hisham to come back for Christmas because he thought America would be safe. and safer than Palestine. And he's my son, husband is so bitter that where he thought my son would be safe in Burlington, no, he was worried about the boys wearing, you know, being targeted as being Palestinian, but he thought in Burlington that wouldn't happen. And we don't know the motivation for the man who attacked them. But it is a bitter thing to think that the children, the young men were targeted for being different and targeted in such a vicious way. And being targeted for just being themselves. Three young men, they'd just been to a bowling birthday party for my 8-year-old nephews, and they had three young men had gone and played with the kids, and they were walking around the block as they often do. They love to walk and talk. And out of nowhere, their lives were changed. America is a place where you can get the best education, but we need to guarantee that the people who seek education in the U.S. are welcomed, and that the educational institutions and the society look to foment brotherhood and connectivity rather than driving people apart. I just want to add, these are boys who grew up in my house. These are, like, I consider them my children. All three of them, Tahsin and Kenan, they're like my boys, and I would do anything for them. And I am so glad that I am going to see them and to care for them.
That was Elizabeth Price, a mother of one of Saturday's shooting victims. The reporting was contributed by NPR's Brian Mann, who is in Israel and the Israeli-occupied West Bank. This morning, I talked with Senator Bernie Sanders to hear his thoughts about the Burlington shooting. Let's listen to that conversation now.
Well, thank you for calling, Michelle.
Senator, in your recent statement following the shooting in Burlington, you said that hate has no place here or anywhere. And yet there is hate here. Three young Palestinian American men were shot in the street. What does this mean to you that this happened in Vermont?
Well, obviously, I think for all Burlingtonians, for Vermonters, it is an especial horror that it is taking place, so to speak, in our own backyard. The idea that three young men walking down the street get shot, perhaps because of no other reason than they are Palestinian, is unspeakable. But I got to tell you, this is not just a local phenomenon. This is happening all over the country. In fact, I asked for a classified briefing from the FBI about the rise of Islamophobia and anti-Semitism in this country. It's taking place all over America, and this is something we have to be very aggressive in addressing.
Have you received any response to that request?
We are. We're going to be doing a classified briefing, I believe, next week.
Now, recently you wrote an opinion essay in the New York Times called Justice for the Palestinians and Security for Israel. And in it, you said that the blank check approach to supporting Israel needs to end. Now, meanwhile, President Biden has asked Congress to waive oversight rules and provide even more financial support to Israel. So if the U.S. were to provide additional aid there, which it looks like it will, what types of conditions do you think must be attached?
Well, Michaela, here is what my concern is. I think Israel absolutely has the right to defend itself from a horrific, horrific attack that took place on October 7th, which killed 1,300 people. But what worries me very much is that since that attack, we're looking at over 12,000 Palestinians who have been killed, and about two-thirds of them are women and children. And this is just unacceptable, and in fact, a violation of international law. You have a right to go after your enemy, the militants who are attacking you, but you really cannot just be bombing homes and refugee camps and killing women and children. The president has requested, as you know, some $14 billion for Israel, and my view is that money has got to be conditioned. And that means that if we give Israel money, we have to make sure that there is a change in their military policy so they are not killing defenseless civilians. There has to be pauses in bombing, and I think it's a very good step right now that we're in the midst of a pause, which has not only freed some of the hostages, but also has finally allowed the massive amounts of humanitarian aid, the food, water, fuel, medical supplies that the community desperately needs. And we also need to have Israel begin to address the reality that there must be a two-state solution in the region, that the Palestinian people are entitled to their own homeland. All of this is complicated. It is enormously difficult. It has been discussed for the last 75 years. There have been five wars in the last 15 years. Nothing easy about this. But I think the days of just giving a blank check to Israel should be over.
And what changed or shaped your thinking on this? What's led you to call so vocally for more restrictions to financial support to Israel?
Well, when you have 12,000 people who have been killed and many more have been wounded, and the vast majority of them are women and children, this, I think, should be of concern to every American. Israel has the right to defend itself, but you cannot be killing thousands of children in the process. There has to be a change in military tactics.
Oh, Senator Sanders, in your op-ed, you also call for an immediate end to, quote, Israel's indiscriminate bombing. But you don't use the word ceasefire, which your colleague in the House, Becca Ballant, has called for. And so, you know, just last night in Burlington, I was at a rally when protesters were calling very stridently for all of Vermont leaders to push for a ceasefire. Do you think there should be a ceasefire in the region?
Well, the problem, I'm delighted, and I was one of the very first members of Congress to call for a pause in the bombing, and that's what we have right now. The problem with a ceasefire is Hamas is pretty honest and straightforward about it. They don't believe in a ceasefire. What they have said before October 7th, what they have said after October 7th is their desire is to destroy Israel and to kill Israelis. And I think it's kind of hard to have a ceasefire within that context. But what I do think we need to do is to take a hard look, as I've just said, about unconditional funding for Israel. And we have to push Israel into a very different direction, which, among other things, moves us toward a two-state solution.
So to be clear there, you're not calling for a ceasefire because it seems highly unlikely that Hamas would agree to something like that?
It's not highly unlikely. That's what they've said. They said it before October 7th. They said it after October 7th. They said that we want to destroy Israel. That is our goal. I don't know how you have a ceasefire within that context.
Now, Senator, you've also called for an end to Israeli occupation of Gaza, for the full recognition of Palestine following the formation of a new democratically elected government there, a two-state solution. Some progressives are calling for a one-state solution now. Why do you believe a two-state solution is not only best, but
possible? It's a one-state solution. Look, that is my view, and I think very much that what we need in the region is for the Palestinian people to have a state of their own. We need to have hope for the Palestinian people. What's going on right now in Gaza before October 7th was a total disaster. You had youth unemployment of over 70%. And I'm also very concerned what's going on in the West Bank right now, where there have been the killings of many Palestinians and driving Palestinians off of their land. So I think the best way forward is a two-state solution. And with that, Mikhail, I'm going to have to apologize, but I've got a plane to catch.
All right. Well, Senator Sanders, thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
That was Senator Bernie Sanders speaking to me by phone earlier today. Today on the show, we are sharing community responses to this tragic shooting. I'd like to welcome Wafiq Fawer, a Palestinian and spokesperson for the group Vermonters for Justice in Palestine. When this conversation first aired, we had just listened to a press conference with local and city officials. Wafiq, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Now, we just finished listening to a press conference with city officials. You were on the line during that press conference as well. What are your thoughts on what you just heard?
What I heard is people that most of the people talked about how a great job they did and batting each other, etc. I didn't hear anything about what fueled this situation to bring us to the crime have been committed here in Burlington. The atmosphere have been fueled on the federal level, the President Biden who talked to our mayor in Burlington, and in local level. We see it on the federal level by supporting Israel unconditionally with bombs that caused the killing of thousands of Palestinians, almost 6,000 children among them. You mentioned the death of people over there. It was, words are very important. We should say what happened to those people, civilian people in Gaza. It was slaughter, it was genocide. Two, about the crime committed, everybody tried to swerve away from saying the truth. It is a hate crime. And the situation here in Vermont and Burlington have been fueled for a long time in our government official and institution. Murad himself, the chief of police of Burlington, he threatened us and many members of my community of arrest just the Friday evening when we are peacefully and silently standing on a Christmas tree lightning and carrying photos of Palestinian children get killed at the hands of the Israeli by American weapons. He threatened us to arrest us because we were there. The same happened with many institutions around us in UVM. When every institution here says talking to each other, it will bring results. This is from interfaith communities to universities. And at the same time, they are harassing our students and shutting down the Student for Justice in Palestine, or harassing our students in UVM and Middlebury as well. These incidents and calling anybody advocating for the Palestinian rights and Palestinian self-determination and bringing the story of the Palestinian people here to our community in the U.S., they have been called anti-Semitic. And for that, my community are not only angry now. They are angry, furious, and terrified.
Yeah.
Well, and we have to stress that.
Right. Well, Wafiq, just to jump in here, I also want to add that in a press conference just now, we heard from members of the shooting victims' families who echoed exactly what you're saying about that fear, that terror, and frankly, still some surprise that something like this happened in Vermont. I hear you saying that unfortunately, in fact, it doesn't feel like a surprise that the climate has been heightened for quite some time now. Wafiq, I heard you speak last night at a vigil for victims in Burlington, and you said that you've been calling your family members in Gaza essentially every day since the crisis broke out on October 7th, sometimes 10 to 20 times a day. And now there's been something of a role reversal where they've been calling you to see how you're doing. Is that right?
It is true. I've been calling my family since October 7th many, many times because I have a fear for their lives and well-being. I get surprised that they heard the news of what's happening here in Vermont. But the harassment of my community, it didn't happen overnight. You have to understand the media is 24 hours talking about the war between Israel and Hamas. marginalizing the Palestinian community of one group when the slaughter for over 15,000 people took place is against the whole Palestinian people. We have fear of this kind of language will continue, and we wouldn't call things by its name. It is a massacre. It is a genocide against the Palestinian people. It is ethnic cleansing, and it didn't happen in October 7th. This is over 75 years old, and there is now the time for the American people to understand what's happening over there. Mm-hmm. And now it's the time to feel towards the fear of my community over here, mm-hmm. who getting harassed just because carrying a flag, wearing kufiya, or wearing hijab. It's happening all over this country. And at the same time, they are trying to muzzle us, and our First Amendment rights here, when they are trying to force institutions in Vermont and the Department of Education to adopt the IHRA, which is the new definition of anti-Semitism. What does it mean? That if I rally, as you saw me last night, if I rally and calling for the Palestinian right and the human right and the right to speak out against the Israeli aggression, it puts me under the new definition that I am anti-Semitic automatically. Mm. Our strongest allies on this struggle here as activists are our Jewish siblings here.
I also want to share on that note a portion of a statement from three area rabbis who write, "We denounce this horrendous violence in our community, and we denounce any hatred that could lead to an act like this. As Jews, we are keenly aware of the impact of violence on minority religious communities, and so we stand in solidarity with our Muslim brothers and sisters at this frightening time." Let's go to the phone lines. We have a call from Stacy in Morrisville. Stacy, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Okay. Hi there. I just want to say I've been thinking a lot about the three boys that were shot. And I've also been thinking about why we keep funding Israel with weapons and money to continue what's been going on for a long time, but especially in the last month or so.
Thank you, Stacy. And we spoke about that question around funding of Israel with Senator Bernie Sanders earlier this morning. You'll be able to hear more of that conversation later today and on our website, vermontpublic.org. Wafiq, what do you want to see next from the community here in Vermont? Are there upcoming rallies, vigils, events that you would like to draw awareness to that could help bring people together at this time?
We have a major rally coming this on December 2nd at 1 o'clock on Montpelier Capitol. I want to go back to the statements of the rabbis.
Please.
It's true that it's a positive step, but at the same time, the same members of rabbis signed statements before that stands against the Palestinian community here when they are exchanging the definition of anti-Semitism and the IHRA. The same rabbis who get interviewed in this station during other programs and they stood against the ceasefire now, which is necessary to stop the killing of civilian Palestinian people in Gaza. The same rabbis, on their statements, they mentioned they stand with the Muslim community. How about the Palestinian community when the three young men are all of them Palestinians and identified Palestinians? And why they don't call it as is? It's a hate crime.
Thank you. And I will say I can't confirm at this moment which interviews that you were referring to. They did not occur on Vermont Edition. Perhaps another program on NPR interviewed Yes. Okay. Wafiq Fawar is a Palestinian and spokesperson for the group Vermonters for Justice in Palestine. And Wafiq, I'm just so thankful for you taking the time to speak with us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Always.
I also want to share a couple comments that we've received from listeners ahead of today's show. And if you have thoughts as you listen today, you can email us at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Fran from Weybridge writes, "I am appalled by this most recent shooting in Burlington. Is this how we want to be known in Vermont? Visitors can be shot down in the street. How many more lives will be lost or ruined because we cannot take guns off the street? This is only the latest in a string of violent incidents with guns. Common sense gun control is what we need. Enough is enough." Greg from Burlington writes, "I think a fundraising campaign selling keffiyeh in Burlington for everyone to wear and show solidarity would be a fantastic campaign to counter this hate." Our next guest is Alex Fisher with the group Jewish Voice for Peace in Vermont and New Hampshire. They live in Brattleboro. Alex, welcome.
Thank you. Hi.
Now, can you start out by telling us a bit more about Jewish Voice for Peace? What is your group's goal?
Sure. Jewish Voice for Peace is the largest anti-Zionist organization in the world. It is a grassroots organization that has been organizing for over 20 years to support the end of the occupation of Palestine.
And how many members are there in Vermont?
In Vermont, I would say we are still working on our numbers as there is a large surge in organizing in the last month, but I would say at least over 100, possibly 200 in our Vermont, New Hampshire chapter.
Hmm. And Alex, what have you been feeling in these last couple of days since this shooting in Burlington? What's been going through your head?
Thanks for that question. I'm devastated. I'm scared, not for myself, but for my Palestinian and Arab friends and comrades and community members. This is, I think, echoing what Wafiq shared. It is horrific, but it's not unsurprising. So for me, there is a large connection to if we are at war globally against Palestinians, if we are, you know, complicit as a country in the genocide of Palestinians, that is going to show up on our home soil, that is going to show up in our local communities in attacks and violence against our Palestinian community here. And so for me, there is just a devastation around the reality of the anti-Palestinian climate, the acts of unmitigated aid to Israel, and the ways that often Jewish safety is used as an excuse for these sort of horrific attacks, both on a local and global level. So for me, there is a lot around both local and global climate that is getting parsed out in my brain.
Yeah.
And in my heart.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if you could tell us a bit.
I think,
go ahead.
Well, I think I just want to also say what's happening right now in hearing the press conference is also, I hear a large focus on what is being done after the violence, but not what is being done to prevent the violence, right? And what kind of culture and political shift is needed to switch from a dehumanizing of Palestinians to a support, a welcoming, and a respect for Palestinian life and experience, and to really uplift the challenges, you know, that have been going on, and also to really, I think, create and shift how we see Palestinians in this country by way of what we are doing globally. So again, just like a focus on how are we actually preventing violence and harm, not how are we responding to it.
And Alex, how did you come to be involved in advocacy work in this way? Like, could you tell us a bit more about like your background and what sort of led you on this path? Because I think a lot of folks who are listening, you know, are on paths of their own, trying to square maybe what the messaging that they learned or grew up with what they're reading about in the news, what they're hearing from people, and trying to kind of create a new worldview in many ways.
Thank you. So for me, and I've said this publicly a few times now, I grew up in a conservative Jewish Ashkenazi home, which meant that it was a very very Zionist community, Jewish community that I grew up in by way of not speaking about Palestine. I grew up in a home and a Jewish community that just didn't talk about Palestine while it was being occupied. And when I went to college and became more politicized and found out about the horrific occupation of Palestine, the Nakba in 1948, and just the history of Zionism, I stepped away from Judaism because I didn't know how to be complicit in that. I didn't know how to be against the occupation of Palestine while still being Jewish. And years later, it was through friends that were organizing as anti-Zionist Jews that I was able to come back to my religion, to come back to my culture and my ancestors by way of understanding that actually one of the major tenets of Judaism, Tikkun Olam, a healed and just world, is actually in accordance with anti-Zionism, with the idea that we can exist and that we must exist in coordination, you know, and in peace with others, and not using Judaism as an excuse for occupation and violence. And so for me, the deepening of my connection with Judaism, both on a spiritual and a cultural level, has happened only by way of finding anti-Zionist community, by finding and being aligned with those that also believe that there is a separation between the state of Israel and Judaism, that there not all Jews are spoken for by the militarized state of Israel that has occupied Palestine and displaced millions of Palestinians over the decades. Hmm.
Well, let me pause here to reintroduce you. Our guest right now is Alex Fisher with the group Jewish Voice for Peace in Vermont and New Hampshire. They live in Brattleboro. And today we're convening this conversation in the wake of a shooting in Burlington on Saturday evening of three college students of Palestinian descent who are visiting Burlington. Let's go to the phones now. We have a call from Burlington from Ayla. Ayla, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, so grateful to be here today. Thank you, Alex, for speaking out. I'm calling as a Jewish woman who lives in Burlington, who works two blocks from where the shooting occurred. And yeah, in my heart, I just truly feel so much less safe as a Jewish woman since the shooting has occurred, because I know that my safety is directly tied to the safety of my Palestinian friends and family and neighbors. And I'm so heartbroken. And I say this as a woman with Israeli family, with family members in the IDF. I'm so heartbroken by what my family and the truly fascist Israeli government regime is doing to the people of Gaza, and what our local forces are doing to the people of my neighborhood. This violence is here. And I am really calling to say that I'm grateful for the organizing everybody's doing, but I want to know from earlier today, what are our elected officials doing to call for a ceasefire today, to maintain the ceasefire today? And especially, what are they doing to end funding to Israel long-term, to address the root of the problem? What are they doing today? Maybe you all can shine some light on that.
Well, thank you for calling in, Ayla. Yes, Representative Becca Ballant has called for a ceasefire. Senator Bernie Sanders, who I spoke to earlier this moring, has not specifically called for a ceasefire. He has called for a pause in the bombing, and also is pushing President Biden to attach essentially
more strings to the funding that is going to Israel. We spoke earlier today, and you'll be able to hear more of that conversation with more details on his stance later today on Vermont Public. Alex, before we let you go, I'm wondering what your short-term next steps are going to be. What kind of conversations are you having? What kind of actions might your group be taking that our listeners might want to be aware of?
Yeah, thank you, Michaela. I think there's a few, you know, we're still calling for the same things. To echo Wafiq and to echo what Ayla just shared, we are continuing to organize to pressure our representatives and our senators to not only call for a ceasefire, but to take action by signing resolutions. We, you know, are proud of their bravery, especially our Jewish delegates to put themselves on the line. And also what is needed is action by way of signing onto resolutions or introducing bills to actually create that change. So we're still putting that pressure on. We are in coalition with the Vermont Coalition for Palestinian Liberation, which is organizing a rally on Saturday, December 2nd at the State House in Montpelier. So again, Saturday, December 2nd at the State House, please join us. And also for those down in Brattleboro area near me today, there will be a vigil from 5 to 6 regarding the shooting and the attack this weekend. That will be at Pliny Park in Brattleboro. And I think in short, what we're doing is uplifting and supporting the voices of our Palestinian community. And if that, you know, for me, that means using the privilege of being a Jewish American right now, where the attention is on us and our safety, to use that moment to focus on Palestinians and really share that I am not interested in safety for myself unless there is safety for my Palestinian and Arab family and friends.
That was Alex Fisher with Jewish Voice for Peace in Vermont and New Hampshire. Alex, thank you for joining us. Joining us now is Vermont's Lieutenant Governor David Zuckerman. He spoke last night at a rally in Burlington outside of City Hall. Lieutenant Governor, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michaela. I appreciate the opportunity.
Lieutenant Governor, why did you feel it was important to attend the rally last night and to speak? You were the only politician, I believe, who spoke.
Well, I had spoken with Wafiq earlier in the day once I had learned that the three victims were all Palestinians. He was one of the first people I called. And we spoke a few times throughout the day, and he told me about the rally. And I just felt it was really important to be there in solidarity with the community that was feeling such trauma and grief. And also, at that time, nobody knew yet that the person had been apprehended, and so many in the community were still feeling tremendous fear that there was someone out there who very likely had a hate-filled motivation to cause this harm and might yet cause further harm. So I was there to stand in solidarity with them and their grief, pain, and fear.
And at the rally, you mentioned that you are concerned about finger pointing and how that can perpetuate this cycle of harm and pain. What do you think your fellow state and local officials could be doing to actually crack down on this violence and increase peaceful discourse?
Well, I think we certainly have to model it. And I appreciate that. I believe our delegation to Washington, the mayor, the governor have all expressed very measured comments and grief for everybody involved. And many have spoken up about what's happening in the Middle East right now and in general about sort of a militaristic approach to what's happening around the world as being not the best solution. We obviously have some politicians who seem to thrive on fomenting distrust, hate, and othering. And I think those of us that are in office need to try not to do that and also need to remind people that within each of these communities, there is a huge range of perspectives and values and beliefs. And you know, not all Jews in Israel are supportive of the horrific bombings in Gaza. And obviously the vast majority of Palestinians had nothing to do with Hamas's horrific attack on October 7th. And so I just think it's really, you know, on the one hand, I have people saying to me, oh, you're trying to have it both ways. And you always talk about people on all sides. Well, you know, right now in this moment, we need to focus on support for these families. I was incredibly impressed with Roddy and Rich's comment earlier in this in the press conference in their restraint from pointing fingers. And I think if the family members can restrain themselves, and I think all of us who aren't as close to it ought to be able to do so as well.
Let me share a couple of emails that we've received during today's show. Sonia in Brattleboro writes, I'm a Jew living in Brattleboro, and I wanted to add my voice, connecting the anti-Palestinian attack on individuals in our state with the global attack and genocide of Palestinians. We need to humanize Palestinians and Arabs by ending U.S. support for the ongoing occupation of Palestine. They go on to write that as a youth going to Hebrew school, we learned about the Holocaust, and we learned to say never again. And when I say never again, I mean for anyone, anywhere. Not in my name and not with my tax dollars. We also got an email from Valerie who writes, this is a black eye for our state. We all like to think that Vermont is more progressive, more accepting than other places, but this horrible incident shows it's not so. We need to stop talking and start actually making changes so this senseless violence does not keep happening. Lieutenant Governor, I'd love for you to comment on that last email from Valerie. It seems to point at this this feeling that many Vermonters still have that you know, oh, these things can happen here. You know, not in our small state, not in our brave little state. What do you think about that? Being someone that loves Vermont, obviously, so much.
Yeah, I really appreciate both of their comments, Sonia and Valerie. My first note of what I wrote down today, along with really naming and expressing my sympathies to the families and specifically to Tashin and Keenan and Hisham, my very next note was that this is a real awakening or another awakening for many Vermonters that we're not free from hate here in our amazing little state. And we may have less than other places, but it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And I know there are many people in Vermont from a range of histories and backgrounds who feel elements of oppression and hate regularly. And so I think Valerie really nailed it with respect to, you know, it's not perfect here. And we do need to continue to work on it. It's one of the reasons I've been having conversations around the state on book banning in terms of information, and where in some states information is being restrained in schools around our racial history, around gender and orientation and so forth. And, you know, we need to, in Vermont, double down on a more broad history of reality, both here at home and around the world, so that when these events happen around the world, we are not only learning the brief snippets from primarily the capitalist news world. Of course, VPR is an exception to the capitalist version of that. But even in news stories I've heard on NPR, they'd say the names of hostages who are released on one side of this equation right now, and then just numbers of Palestinians who are released as if they're not individual humans and individual people. So I think we have to keep humanizing it, as Sonia spoke about as well.
Well, Lieutenant Governor, just briefly, before we have to wrap up, we received an email earlier from Fran in Weybridge who brought up the issue of common sense gun control. Do you see a connection there with what happened on Saturday? Do you think that this could be a spark for change around gun control legislation in the state?
Well, I do think we've been making progress these last number of years, both initially when Governor Scott shifted some of his position, which I really respect him for, on that first bill a number of years ago. This last session, we passed a waiting period, and we have red flag laws. You know, I think there is more to do, but I also think we have to be careful not to, along with the finger-pointing comment you referenced earlier, not to immediately draw a conclusion or a straight line. If this person had no history with criminal action or convictions and went through a waiting period, that's a lawful purchase. And I don't know that there's a way to eliminate all guns or restrict people from being able to buy firearms entirely at all.
Well, Vermont's Lieutenant Governor David Zuckerman, I'm so sorry to have to cut you off, but we do have to wrap up. We so appreciate your time today and the time of everyone who joined this conversation. It is certainly not the last time we will be discussing this here on Vermont Edition. Today's show is directed by James Stewart and produced by Tedra Meyer, Andrea Lorien, and Daniela Fierro. Our call screener today was Andrea Lorien, and our theme music was composed by Myra Flynn. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch up again soon.